misconstrued to mean meat from all level of thinking. The another thing we have to consider, that man became worse than the beast in the field. Man actually became cannibal at one time. How far he fell. Look how far he fell himself. He fell from the divine nature of spirit, the angelic principle of absorbing energy from the atmosphere, down to the point where he had to use plant life. Good night. Then he came down to animal form. Then he went as far as human form. Then he went as far as human form. That's when the Lord really got angry and was drunk without the whole thing, because he was worse now than the animals. You see, he would not have destroyed men had he merely at the animals. And if the tendencies of the animals were not transferred to him, then man would not have gone to eat man. As he ate one flesh form, it was no different to him than to eat his own flesh form. Man got that low in consciousness. And the evidence is in the physical world around us. So in destroying us, we have to reincarnate to learn the horrible lesson of our own ignorance. Now, people say that Jesus ate meat and encouraged eating of meat and fish. Jesus never ate no meat and never ate no fish. There is no mention or any fact that Jesus ate any meat or fish. So they cite one particular example where he ate. And the example that they cite is that when he died and resurrected, he was on the edge of the seashore, and the ship was coming in with his disciples, and they recognized it near a brazier, what they call a little hibachi or outdoor spit, cooking fish and honeycomb. And he asked them, "Have you eaten?" And he said, "No." And he broke and gave them, and they did eat. And the question is, which did he eat? It didn't say he ate the fish or the honeycomb. It merely said he broke and they did eat. His students were not completely relieved from their mental block. And the fish was their only source of sustenance, they knew. They were have much vegetables, they didn't have much planting. So he gave them the piece of fish or gave them the honeycomb. They say he had the fish or he had the honeycomb. There's no mention which one he took. So we know definitely with any doubt that he still did not openly eat the fish. As to say, "I eat the fish and you eat the honeycomb, you're my disciple." He didn't say that like that. But there are some writings by the Dead Sea Scrolls in which it states that some of the disciples of Jesus, after he had gone, were strict vegetarians, to the point where they, wherever they went, they would make sure that the people who they were going to meet were non-meat eaters, especially the man Matthew. He carried and traveled very likely with his own food. And in the case of Peter being tested as to his sincerity of what he was doing, he called all the things that were supposed to be not eaten unclean. But the Lord of creation said, "Everything I made is clean." That means they were not made with the intention of greed, anxiety, stress, and all. They were made simply as forms of creation. These 84 million life forms were all made. Now,
What was it that man transferred to these life forms when he came out of the ark? So, man's electrical nature was projected into the kingdom to set them apart among themselves. And when man's fear is withdrawn from these kingdoms, then these things will live in harmony with themselves. So the animal then sees to destroy you by recognizing what from you?
Sorry, I didn't hear your question.
The animal then seeks to destroy you by recognizing what in you?
Fear.
Because you did what to the animal? The law of cause and effect. As you sow, that you reap. So we set apart between the carnivorous now and the non-carnivorous by imposing on them this fear pattern. When all creatures were basically non-meat eaters. In the ark, there were no extra pair of creatures to feed the rest. They had to carry grain to feed themselves. And all creatures did eat of grain. The things that move on the face of the earth that were not of flesh.
So all animals actually
eat flesh? Yes. You take any animal, carnivorous, red rabbit, and so-called enemies, and put them all in a pyramid, and in a few minutes you'll see all acting natural without any animosity because the fear patterns are shunted out. And they would not care to eat each other. And they merely lie down and frolic and they'll eat beans or cook rice, cook beans. They're basically natural green eaters. We tend to separate them because of their intestinal structure and their canine fang in their mouth. And they say that one has a fang tear meat and the other has a molar to grind herbs or nuts to survive. Basically, the animal is a non-meat eater. But the fear that we imposed upon them brought them into that level. Not too long ago, I saw a beautiful picture of a mouse, a canary, a cat, a bulldog, and a lioness all lying down in a cage. And the keeper said, there is no way to aggravate these creatures to hate each other. They all love to eat bananas. It's interesting.
You mentioned putting them into a pyramid. Is this the effect that a pyramid has, reducing fear?
Mm-hmm.
Are humans too?
Yes. It not only has that if one, that's only one of the effects it will remove. Fear will be removed, but there are other things that will be removed by doing it. And you have to be at a certain height of the pyramid.
There's one place where the disciples ask each other, has any man brought him something to eat? And he said, I have meat to eat that ye know not of.
Yes, when I was a boy studying to be a priest, I always suspected he had chicken up his sleeve and he was holding out on the boys. And he said, I have meat that ye know not of. He was not inferring what we think as flesh. He was inferring a form of food or sustenance.
I took that to be figurative.
You see, the word meat, it's only in America In the Anglo-Prose connotation, we use the word meat to imply animal. Meat is the old English word, way back from the early Saxon period, for food, sustenance. You see, that's the word sustenance. We use the word today to describe the cow.
Yes.
Apart from the goat, the sheep, and the lamb, and the chicken.
I took that to mean bull.
Yeah. He said, they were surprised. He had sent them to get food. And they came back, and they were surprised to see him refreshed, as if he had eaten. Now, where did he get the meat from? Where did he get the food from? That was what they were questioning in their minds. Where did the master nourish his body from? And I read it as a boy and studying the time. I thought he held out in the boys and had an extra spare piece of chicken somewhere on his sleeve, and I'm not going to let nobody know. Which is, you know, that's where you're hiding it in somewhere. It's just kids, we used to do that. When we go to a school and you hide your piece of chicken or something so that nobody knows you're eating and you're nibbling by yourself. But he said, I have nourishment or meat that you know not of. He was inferring that within his consciousness, he did not depend on the physical substances of solids and liquids in the form of food to nourish his mechanism, but he lived directly on divine current passing through the medulla, the audible light stream. That is why when he was tested or fasted in the mountaintop of his own soul nature, he had mastered this principle. When his own ego put the challenge for him and said, why are you fasting? Why don't you change these stones into bread, into food, into nourishment, and stop your fasting and be a real human being and be down to earth, be a nerdy person. Don't try to be too godly of everybody. That's a superego conflict. But the consciousness merely replied, it is written. And these two words are important. Written, it is written. These three words are very important. That man, that means this information has been written down someplace. That man does not live by bread alone. He doesn't nourish himself by solids and liquids through mastication and absorption and by planting and growing it. But by every word, the audible life current that proceeds out of the mouth of God, it passes through the medulla. So he had resources or recourse to that particular internal technique of absorbing sustenance from the atmosphere, which his disciples were not able to do since he was in that state of Christ consciousness already. The disciples had to work past that state. Now the disciples were not Christ realized, you see. And to be Christ realized is to get rid of all your desires. So you have the power to crystallize desires, but not your own. Now, they were not in that state, so they had a desire. What were their desire? A desire to feed the physical body in the form of solids and liquids, which they call nourishment, meat, or food. He having no desire, just that being his home, he's from another realm of pure inner awareness. So his body is not dependent on this environment. He was like Teresa Newman in the autobiography of Yogi, living strictly on divine essence. And he had the capacity to recharge the body cells by virtue of biofeedback. In the yoga language, it means that he was able to switch the energy around by love. In modern technology, he knew how to go from beta to alpha. We're only changing words to say what is happening inside. And then we can go from one level to the other, we can do these internal movements. So we don't have to depend on physical substances to regulate. His disciples could not go into those states. They weren't trained sufficiently, they weren't disciplined sufficiently. They didn't break away from their habit patterns, their cravings and desires. They still crave in a literal way, in a physical way, for the physical things of the world to nourish the physical symptoms that the body produced. He had risen above hunger, he had risen above sleep, he had risen above all these basic five movements, that he was able to switch this thing along inside. They didn't rise above it, they had to struggle with it. And when they were able to do it, then it's a different story. He had already awakened the Kundalini energies in his spine, which is the Holy Ghost, or the Pentecostal movement, is the awakening of the Kundalini. But in the Pentecostal movement, it happens unconsciously in the person. In the spiritual man, it's consciously turned on. This is the difference. When the Son of Man is lifted up, I draw all men unto thee. When the energy is raised up, that's what the Son of Man is, from the lower chakra up to the top of the head, then this power is working through on a conscious level. When it comes down as a comforting thing, since you can't do it by yourself, it comes down by grace, and that's what the Pentecostal experience is. The Pentecostal experience is something descending upon you without any control, and suddenly you find yourself in that state, and by virtue of your love for God, you attract it down to you. If you don't trigger it off inside and say you have control, because it doesn't work by control. It's when it's turned on by control, you know. Now, in the case of Catherine Coleman, she is developing the control, and she can recognize the control. So Jesus was saying he was aware of their power. He was actually nourishing himself from these forces. What about egg?
Yes. My father was a vegetarian, except that he would drink milk and eat milk products and eat eggs.
Milk.
You didn't have to kill the hen or to kill the cow.
Oh, wait a minute. Milk is a secretion. Like we secrete milk to feed a baby.
Yes.
But an egg has life. The evidence is when you crack the shell of an egg, it cries. It has already been proven by instruments today at the Baxter Research Foundation. There's a book called The Secret Life of Plants. They are capable of measuring the crying pain of the death of the egg when you crack the shell. It actually cries like a dead child. They have measured it.
An infertile egg also.
Even infertile egg, because you're cracking the shell.
Well, there's also in the book, so I just heard, that it speaks of the crying of the plants as they are destroyed and harvested.
All right. Now let's come back to something. Remember this. The egg was not singled out to be eaten, or was not commanded for man to partake. The plant was. So by virtue of our love for the plant, when we harvest the plant and says, now we are harvesting you for your full destiny of serving the Lord's creation, they don't cry no more. They cease to cry. They have tried it. They made research on it. Every time they go to harvest, they call the whole field and tell the whole field, we're coming to harvest you for your full destiny, meaning it's the purpose you were designed for, so that that particular anguish and anxiety pattern is no longer there, which is man's fear transferred to it. Their fear of knowing that they're going to be consumed is now released. That's why they call it, in the Eastern people call it prashadam, the blessing of the sustenance, the consecrating of it, restoring it back to its original state of direct command by the Lord of creation, designed for the creation to consume. We are a creation. We were assigned a certain type of a creation to consume as nourishment. But our fear was transferred by the Lord of creation to separate us, to keep us in that state of respect. Now, when we go back and respect the creation, and tell them we are doing this now, then there is no bond of reaction there. There is no indigestion reactions. There is no tension.
And it makes you wonder sometimes about mowing the lawn or pulling weeds or any of those things, let alone harvesting trees and we need the lumber. And you get into all this, you think, well,
you're not
destroying life.
You're not, when you tell them that you are doing it, they don't resent it and they sprout up back and come back.
I doubt if very many lumbermen do that. So.
Quite true, but the thing is this, the reason why the lumbermen don't do it, and the fault lies not in the religion, the fault lies in our churchianity, and the fault lies in our language. There was a time when men treated every object in the universe as male and female until he used the word it. Then it lost its intimacy with him. It became a definite, non-related creature. Anytime we refer to something as an it, we have shut it out from our whole relationship. And therefore, this is living in a state of limbo in consciousness. And until we restore the balance of respect. Now, in French.
French, you know, they have the male and female, even a table.
So it's la verre.
Yes.
La, it's feminine, the glass. But in English, the glass is the glass and it's just another it. The table is an it, but in French it's la table, la, feminine. In the whole of the Eastern culture, the yin and the yang, the male-female principle, the whole positive relation, negative, this whole universe is a polarity. The it also exists, you see, positive, negative, neutral, but that neutralness is only reserved for God. Not for his creation. We have taken away the right of God to act upon his creation by imposing the neutralness upon it with our own minds, by using the semantic of it and classifying it. Only God, the creative intelligence, has reserved the word it for its own integrity. Man doesn't have that right to impose it upon anything. Therefore, he has a conflict in his environment. As the science is being accumulating and the facts are being exposed to us about what we've done to ourselves, then a sense of re-evaluation is occurring now in man's mind, that he has to treat everything now on a more intimate base. So Schweitzer pointed the road by saying, we have to develop a reverence and an intimacy for life around us. And later on, it was Carlson Wade and Margaret Mead who broke the intellectual animosity of the scientific world and forced them to accept parapsychological evidence and give it a sense of new values, which would have kept us a long way of trying to relate on the scientific level that this thing is not an it. We still go ahead and think of it as now you've got scientists working with objects in their lab that handling life cultures to work with, and they don't treat those beakers anymore as a myth. They know something happens when they treat it like that, these cultures die faster.
I know Schweitzer even objected to someone killing an ant that was crawling up his garment.
Mm-hmm.
He says, after all, it was my ant.
Yeah.
And the only time he would permit spraying was when he was performing surgery,
mm-hmm.
and felt he had to have a sterile field, and a relative of his said that he would permit spraying in the operatory.
So you see, there...
He had a real reverence for anything alive. It pains me how birds are being killed.
I don't see too many of them around now.
Huh?
I don't see too many birds around. The air is so polluted.
Not in the air, no. We have birds, but we don't have barn swallows because they don't eat seed, they eat insects.
Mm-hmm.
and they live near people because they live in or on a building, and they live near people, and people are bound to feel they have to kill insects, which are their only food. And in the last 12 and a half years where we live, although we have barns all around us, I've only heard one barn fall.
Oh,
very, very, very.
Purple martins, chimney swifts. They don't need to be.
It's like when Hurricane Carla came through Texas. As soon as they knocked down all the buildings and left the place almost desolate, a swarm or a flock of starlings came into the city of Galveston. And right away the city fathers decided to poison them and try to get rid of them. And the starlings were driven away. It was not that more than an hour after, the whole town was invaded by rats. And then they realized they couldn't kill the rats and they had to go get some starlings. They had to turn loose hundreds of thousands of dollars of starlings to get rid of the rats. Because they couldn't, they had no way to stop it, they didn't know where it was coming from. They couldn't put out enough decon or anything to kill them off or get rid of them or drive them to burn them out. And one of the naturalists told them, nature had a sense. The right creature in advance for the problem, but you drove them away. Now you got to spend the money to get flocks of starling to come back.
Maryland has had millions of starlings, and everybody has been wishing to drive them away.
When they do, they're going to be highly surprised on what the rats will do to come out. There is a balance in everything in nature to handle it. Thank you.
Thank you.
When our retreat starts?
Swami Nityananda, 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 Swami Nityananda,
Last evening you were talking about the many life forms. Relative to that, could you say just a little bit about the current flap of UFOs that are going on, just where they fit into these life forms, if at all?
Man? One of the 84 million? There are only two flesh forms, animal and man. Male and female is in man, male and female is in an animal. Extraterrestrial beings are in the man species. That's a broad statement. Man's species is an entire different thing altogether. We don't comprehend man. We are human, evolving into manhood. We use animal models for our behavior levels. You will say of me, I eat like a you'll never use a man model. And I may see of you, you walk like you. When you change the model in your mind, you'll evolve from human to man. But we're in the man level. We are flesh. Types. The animal and the man type. The bridge is human still relating to the animal model's way of behavior. Extraterrestrial is just a label for what? Our naiveness for thinking we're the only creatures on the earth that know it all.
and be blunt. Right?
Can you tell us about their world?
Their world? What's so different about it?
Fly around in UFOs, we drive around in cars.
All labels for things that we don't comprehend. They're like the primitive man living on the island, in his war canoe, and his tom-toms, and his sticks, and his spears. Never seen an aquanaut getting off a boat or a submarine, either an extraterrestrial or extra island creature. And you got a boomstick that lets us fly. And he flips around in a boat on the ocean that has a smokestack. And his windows are around. That's our version of things that we don't know. It's the same as the primitive man's version of a civilized man in his boat. Primitive man's version of a launch that is powered by an Evinrude engine would be exactly our version of our primitive crafts and our boomsticks versus these creatures, other beings' ability to maneuver space. We're labeling things. We're not looking at anything. We're not seeing, let alone not realizing. We're busy labeling it. So what did a primitive man label the object when he saw on the Pacific Ocean? A USO. A non-identified sailing object. We call it an unidentified flying object. The word is right, unidentified. To sail or fly. And it's an object because you can't really get close to it.
How long will it take us to evolve to their point?
It's like saying to us the same thing with the Polynesian man to an American sailor on his warship or his ship of hope going around the earth. How long will they two get together to talk to each other? Chief Muckmuck will say, "All boys, let's go get him. Bunch of scalps tonight." And the other say, "Let's fire a salvo over their head and keep him off." We are in a safe position.
They're obviously far more advanced technically than we are. Are they necessarily more evolved spiritually?
Putting back the same question between you, the Polynesian man in his canoe, and you and your ship of hope. You good, you see? We are talking like the Polynesians here. And we are assuming that these unidentified objects are more evolved than us, and more or less morally developed than us. We don't know. And we're going to go through a lot of drunken hallucinations that we made contact with them. In the first place, if a Polynesian man came face to face with an aquanaut, he'd want to kill him because he's a strange water creature. He's coming out in an element that he knows he's not too safe in. How dare he crawl around in his water? How dare they fly around in our airspace? Isn't that what we're saying in the Pentagon today? So we have a command, intercept and destroy. We don't tell you that though. But that is on the books. The Air Force has the command to intercept and destroy. No way. We're going to accept any object flying around here. Just as no way Chief Muckmuck is going to accept an aquanaut sailing around or swimming around in a lagoon. It's a funny phenomenon of fear. Yet we're going to broadcast and say we want to encounter or seek out extraterrestrial life. Well, how are we going to bridge this communication? How are we going to do it? When Chief Muckmuck decides to invite these aquanauts off the boat to come ashore and get fresh water, he got to do something of a tremendous gesture. How are you going to go about doing it? the other chieftains and the other people on the island will kill him because he's selling out from underneath. That's how he would be behaving. That's how he would behave. The same mental patterns. We only change our dresses and change our habitations. Or have we changed our attitudes to each other? What? What did it change? In the first place, if they landed and they made any contact, who would be the guinea pig in the pen? Who would be the monkey in the cage?
The galactic man.
Yeah, the Aquanaut too. They'll put a halter around his neck, pull him through the streets, put him on display, ship him around in a crate. Got all kind of labels, the greatest wonder since Ripley, believe it or not. We're never going to get down and face each other because our fears are too great. And we're never going to admit to ourselves that technology is inadequate. So it's easier to shoot down and ask questions after. Only human, not man.
Well, if they're so far advanced, then why do they even bother with us?
If we are so advanced, why do we bother to explore the ocean wrong in the Pacific? Same question applies to us. We're more advanced than the Polynesian people in their little island. Why do we go scouting around in their coral reefs?
I don't know.
Simply because we don't have a type of coral reef around where we live that is going to give us information of the ocean floor. Basic fact. They don't have planets like with the same terrain formation and necessary magnetic waves that are similar in the atmosphere that allow them from where they come from to explore and use. So this happened to be Terra, one of the heavenly bodies moving through space within a certain solar system that acts as a feasting ground for their equipment or their, and they explore it. We're just another little Pacific island in their consciousness. A bunch of primitives, humanoids growing up.
Well, what is their, terrain like? What do they do on their planet?
All right, in primitive man in the Polynesian island, he has no skyscraper. He didn't cut down the jungle to make it in an asphalt jungle and pollute it with smoke and blast furnace going. So, he lives on vegetables and fruits and possible a wild pig now and then. He has no cannery, he has no refrigeration. He has no automated solar pop machines. He has no dollars and cents to punch. We live in the asphalt jungle. Our air is polluted. And we survive on vitamin pills and canned food and TV dinners. So, on Earth, we appear to be eating a certain type of food, living within a certain type of atmosphere and breathing a certain type of gas to survive. These individuals may be living in a methane atmosphere or a sulfuric atmosphere. Their life support system will be different simply because they polluted theirs and burn out the oxygen of theirs. No. They don't eat what we eat. They may be using sapphire, ground up sapphire, ground up lapis lazuli, ground up granite. They have a different digestive reaction in their system.
Star Trek
is a pure juvenile imitation of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Very little immature thing of what is happening up there.
That in the relative world, everything is relative to the individual society.
Yes, very, very true. That's why it's called illusion, Maya. Mm-hmm. We are only relative to one point of time and space and one needs. And we think we know it all in this realm. We don't know nothing. We're just becoming aware of a lot of things about ourselves. We're coming out of the animal models of ourselves and our animal behavior patterns and tendencies, trying to grow up into human or man models. We don't even have enough man models for our behavior. When you see a baby born, what do you see when he smiles like a what? Yeah, well, have you met one?
Yeah, I know, that's what I think.
Then you met a UFO if you saw one.
That's what
they're
like.
Yeah, that's what it is. With our suburbia and everything now. Don't we want to get back to the green pasture lands, the paradisial type of living? And what do they want? It's exactly what we're trying to do. We want to get up there to explore and lower ourselves. And they want to get away from their methane, sulfuric and dioxide, different types of life support systems, only to get back to pure oxygen environment. Can we send an astronaut from here to the moon and hope for him to survive without letting him carry his own life support system? If we did, after a while he'll alter his old features for lack of it. They've already got evidence. If he stays too long in space, his molecular structure will start changing. His ears will elongate. His jaw will start spreading out. And before you know it, you'll have what is looking like a distorted animal features. So we come back to pre-assumption that in Atlantean time, men altered men to look like animals. They didn't alter them. They just didn't know the laws of surviving with minus oxygen starvation. The cells will change their shape and their retention and their pressures will alter. Because the life support system will be different.
Will they eventually land and stay down here?
If they're fast enough to get by us. In the first place, the city of Detroit has a law passed last year. Any unidentified object found flying within the airspace of Detroit, the local police has the right to fly and give it a blue ticket. And the ticket is blue for interrupting the noise level. Now this is a law that has passed. I'm not joking. It's a little law for buzzing homes. The governor put it into effect. When you hear a thing like that, you know really how ridiculous we can get. All right. Now the two men that were picked up in Pascagoula by the UFO and went through all the post-hypnotic tests to see that they weren't hallucinating. How was the description of the creatures that they saw? He looked humanoid, but he had an animal face.
Is it then an accumulation of knowledge of other cultures and things like this that causes the individual flat to change as long as we know what they
are? Yes. A lot of things cause us to change too. You eat meat, your skin is coarse and tough and dry. You start eating a lot of vegetables, you get smooth and silky and velvety. You live on oxygen and you have a certain particular shape and form and hold it. Shift from oxygen to other different forms of life support. And the texture and the shape and the body will go through different changes. Because each has a different toxic reaction. And the reaction has a different distortion.
So what are we supposed to work with?
We only look in relation to our ideation of our models in our mind, and we don't know what the true model of ourself is. Your skull always looks the same when you tear off the skin out of it. The skeleton looks the same. There are certain segments. But does the skin look the same in everybody? Does the texture look the same? Does the hair look the same? When you look at me and having no concept of anatomy, you wouldn't believe I can take a piece of rub and push it through my nose and take it out through my mouth. There is no visible way that your mind will conceive of it, having no concept of anatomy. And some joker is called a yogi comes along with a wax pot, pushes it through here, take it out through here, no light. And you say, gosh, man, that's a miracle. No, nothing new. Doctors are doing it every day to keep you from choking in operation. The thing is hollow. All right, take this hand. Do you see any possibility of driving a nail right through here to the other side without breaking the bone?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I get places in your wrist that you can just drive it through without hitting the bone.
Only because you've been exposed to it before or heard of it, but you got no real visual experience. That will be. You'll always be doubtful of the possibility of doing it. You'll always fear you'll get popped the bone. Until you know the anatomy, you know the measurements, the geometry, you're not going to attempt to push a nail right through here and come on the other side. And not just any other nail. It has to be a certain size, certain shape for it to go through. Come on the other side without breaking the bone.
What is the true model?
There is no true model for me.
Then why are we smarter than we are?
Who is smarter than me? Who is smarter than me? Ask yourself the question. Man's possible.
Well, these UFOs that land, they claim they can stop on a dime, all right? They can go at tremendous speeds.
Yeah.
We can't do things like that. Those are not things.
That doesn't say they're smarter than you. Who say you?
There's a difference between a feat and who we are.
There's
a difference between an action. You know, even if you want to take that astronaut landing or whatever it is on a dime, so what? That's a feat. That's not. Does that make that astronaut who he is?
Right.
Well, I don't know.
You see, the thing is this: man's possible evolution, possible evolution from the human level to full manhood lies within his spinal column. Now, within your spinal column, you have the key to internal evolution of manhood. Now, any being who appears to be ultra smart or ultra educated or with higher technological background merely did one simple thing. Increase the velocity rate of the spinal flow from the coccyx to the brain by virtue of the location on the planet or where he came from. Some do it by natural law, others do it by controlled environmental equipment, but it's still understanding natural law. You sung to sleep at night, it'll take a whole year to evolve your brain to comprehend a little bit of change of nature. others do the holy breath, and one registration changes their brain. So who's smarter? Well, this is what we're talking about. You see? The brain is increased every 7 years. The body changes every 7 years, cellular-wise. Isn't that what our scientist tells us?
Yeah.
All right. Did a scientist actually change the cells of a human body every 7 years? What did he arrive at? A conclusion or a deduction or a result of an experiment? What did he arrive at? Did he arrive at the result of an experiment that he performed on your body, knowing 7 years going to get a change? Or you will arrive at a conclusion or a deduction?
Say a conclusion.
From a long series of what?
Tests.
Only to prove what you originally started out to deny. See, somebody's got to tell him that the human body changes every 7 years. And he's got to start out denying it. Till he ends up doing what? And then he proves it, what does he say? Yeah, you're right, but we got hold of it now. We got a right to say it, not you. It's legal. It's medically factual. So the bureaucrats and the big office and the policy makers back him up, and we live with the naiveness now. Only they have the right to say that the thing is right. And any attempt to say it by any other media, it's a violation of the FDA. This is how we live and think. And we don't even realize we're doing it to ourselves. We have already set up all the agencies to isolate us away from human contact. To the point we're getting to be like a physical flesh machine. We're doing it to ourselves. It's very, very tragic. But this is our so-called life in which we find ourselves.
Will it ever change? Within the next 30 years, anyway?
Change is made by sacrifice. And how many are willing to sacrifice themselves for their fellow men to bring a change?
A lot of people would have to go and think the same.
That's the whole thing in a nutshell. Yes, we are living in an illusion, and we are deluded by it, hence it's called relativity. For instance, all right, what is this object? That's a nice name for it. A nice name for it. What is a paperweight? My foot could be a paperweight. What is it made from? What is steel made from?
Iron.
And what is iron made from?
Atoms.
And what is atoms made from?
Energy.
And what does energy come from?
God.
Where does God come from?
That's a good question.
You see?
no matter where we go, we're going to end up with the nameless question, or the questionless question. By no stroke of the mind can you solve your creation. You will always end up in a state of verballess communication.
Yeah.
Right, feeling. You go back to feeling.
You're not really supposed to understand it then.
You're supposed to stand under it. Mm-hmm. If you're going to get anything, get understanding, but not comprehension in the sense of the word that you're going to decipher it and analyze it and pick it apart and think you can put it. You get to be able to stand under the processes of flow. And in its flow, you realize its magnitude, which is greatness. Then you're free. That's what brings freedom. The freedom of not trying to decipher it, the freedom of it occurring spontaneously, continuously, in your immediate awareness. It's called a nameless void. In some books they call it Anam-lok. In other books they call it Nirvana. In some books they call it beingness.
Mm.
Or the hairness of hair.
You're just supposed to go through life happy and stupid.
That's what the poet said. Mine is not the reason why. Mine is to do and live. But if he used the word die, he was not referring to cease to live. He was referring to die in the sense of ceasing to hold on to old ideas about yourself. So don't reason about the process and try to get uptight about it. The process is going on. The process is supposed to live in it. And how we live in it is evolution. You're making not progress. So you're too hung up on the word, you're trying to make progress. It's not progress we're trying to do in life. We're trying to relate to our environment by the by various techniques of utilization for the benefit of keeping ourselves in a happy frame of mind. So if I want to talk to you, and you live, say, 10 miles from here, and I took a drum and I did boom, 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 and you did back boom, boom, boom. So for the sake of utilization, I run a piece of wire from your house to my house, 10 miles, and then we put two tin cans, and we pull it, twing, twing. We're not we found a way how we can magnetize it. What have we got? Then the wires are too expensive because you can't find all the copper in the ground when you need it. So you decide to get rid of the wire and you make a radio phone. It's not progress. It's just techniques of utilization for survival.
You're just supposed to accept the whole thing and be happy and just go on your
merry. Yes, the happiness is that it's getting each other closer to oneness. We live in a one world, in a one unified process, but we are separated by our technological differences.
Would you agree that acceptance is the key to the total acceptance now of the here and now? Is the key to this happiness of, you know, to being at peace.
Yes. Total acceptance is total surrender, which is the key to be happy all the time.
Not resignation.
No, not resignation. Resignation is a denial.
Uh-huh.
Acceptance is a positive involvement.
Mm-hmm.
You're emerging from your weaknesses when you accept the challenge. The man who was given 5 talents and went out and doubled it and made 5 more was an acceptance of challenge. The one who hid his under the bed was a denial, a resignation. No more can be got from it. So what did he get? The consciousness took it back from him. So life is challenged. Life is venturesome.
life is unfolding only when we accept the unfoldment, and it sustains us. A plant can't continue to grow if we don't have more seeds in it. If you cook the seeds are not going to sprout up. So the continuation of the plant is based upon the essence of the plant. The continuation of our existence is based on the essence of our nature. And spiritual teachers only come to tell us this, that this is not our real home. This illusion is not our real home. This illusion is a temporary stomping ground, a temporary way station between one level of beingness to another level of beingness. But we are so attached to the level of beingness of the senses that we can't detach ourselves to the level of beingness outside of the sensory nature or independent of the sensory nature.
If we were to be able to comprehend and isolate 1 minute, 1 second, and isolate it, this is not hypothetical, but stagnate it, and to take in all that we could possibly take in that 1 minute, if we could keep it and isolate it, I'm talking about perception, I'm talking about being aware of everything that is involved, as compared to how we usually go from minute to minute. I'm trying to type this into the human now, you know, the human, that principle. Are we talking about the same thing?
Yes, we're talking the same thing, just with different semantics.
Well, yeah, I used to get that, you know.
Yeah, we're saying the same thing. The same thing.
Yeah.
What is our true home?
Our true home is called now.
Mm-hmm.
Not be here, I just said be here. I used one word, not three words.
From moment to moment?
I didn't say from moment to moment. Now has nothing to do with moments. The word now encompasses everything. Both beingness and going and coming in beingness. Now, think of it, become aware of what now is. Satchkan only means the abode of God, and where is the abode of God existing? If I said your home is the Satchkan, the abode of God, your mind subconsciously would ask the question, but objectively you would not ask the question because you think you'll sound stupid. Your objective mind would not ask the question because you'll think the answer will come back to you and make you look stupid. Your subconscious mind is asking the question, where is this abode of God? Where is this Satchkan located?
In the third eye.
No, there's no third eye. It's now. Our abode of God is now. Where is the kingdom of God located? Jesus said, thy kingdom, what?
Come.
All right. Figure out the word come. You see any difference between the word now and come?
Now, our conscious beingness. I just want, you know,
you're feeling it, but you can't verbally relate it. Let's admit to ourselves, there is no way you're going to verbally relate now and come.
No.
So
contact,
don't.
Not motion. Motion, not emotion. Motion.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, all right.
So, God has another name, he's called Akal. call is called time, the negative pull. And God, in his true nature, is Akal, the timeless pull. Where is timelessness located?
Now.
And where is now located?
Here.
And that's come.
Another word game.
No, not a word game, it's a feeling relation. The words die out in their importance when the feeling takes over. Because we are soul, we don't have soul. That's why feeling takes over.
Would you mind explaining again about I followed you about the here and now, and how you I don't understand how quite how you tied in come. I was following you up to a
Jesus said, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on
earth."
But he didn't say which the planet Earth.
Thy
will be done in manifestation. Earth is solidity, a tangible expression of nameless energy, which must occur in now. And will means desire to act, the craving to act, the power to act. Yeah. So thy kingdom come. And what is the kingdom?
Best we can do.
So now is the true home of the soul. Now is present tense, not past, not future. And now is also not present. Because now is endlessness, infinity. So, centering yourself in feeling, you always live now. You're not living yesterday and you're not living tomorrow, because these will never occur. They'll only be illusions of the mind. Now is the feeling, now is the reality, now is the only true essence of your nature. But you have to live it, you got to feel it. You got to make every physical action part of it. Then you are free. Free men all, Lord of yourself. Call no man master save the Lord which is in you. And the Lord in you is the nowness of you. And until you experience the nowness in yourself, you don't know what it is to be a master of yourself. You'll always be disturbed and be pulled, and you'll always be weak, and you'll always be confused, and always be worrying.
The total awareness of now, of the now. I used to think, you know, being master of yourself meant, and probably still does, overcoming obstacles of, you know, growing up.
But where are you going to grow up?
That's just the one.
You're growing up in the now with what?
What's
the action of
where
nowness.
Going, huh? Growing up.
See, growing all this occurs in now. Is this candle burning tomorrow?
No.
Is it burning yesterday? So what is burning? Nowness is doing the burning. No, there is no moment to moment. Nowness is doing the burning. Between what? The illusory form of wax. Within the light principle and the sound principle that acts as a flame. It took a match that you had to strike to ignite from sound into light to induce a thermal condition called burning.
Could you say that it used the resources of the now?
Yes.
The
we are using all of the resources of now, and therefore it's infinite. It's not going to be run out, and we're never going to have no shortages.
Kind of
it's happening now. But we are in different time frames of it. So our time frame creates our survival patterns and creates our anxiety patterns. The If your time frame is in proper sequence and proper synchronization, what have you got? Success. If the time frames are incorrect and they're out of synchronization, you have failure. No success. If you were supposed to meet a man at the airport at 6 o'clock and he had a check for you and you owe $1,000 and he was giving you $1,010, but you gotta be there at 6 o'clock. Alright. The time frame determines the success of receipt. Right? That's all. Just being simple and objective about the thing.
Completion. Mm-hmm. The idea of going for the check, being on time at 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. 25 is still there.
Yeah.
I chose to go in.
Right.
The time is success, and that done.
It's completed and it's perfect.
Yeah.
And so perfection is now and completion is now. It's not futuristic, neither is it past.
So we can take little relative actions, you know, that we perform from day to day.
And
right? You know, from time
from time frame to time frame.
Yeah. All right.
And live the successfulness of now. Live the joyousness or the realization or the freedom of now. You're always going to be happy. Jesus says, be cheerful, for I have overcome the world. And it's a world too, not the one W-O-R-L-D. It's a W-H-I-R-L. What's the W-H-I-R-L? The spin, the pull between, the push and pull between yesterday and tomorrow. Be of good cheer, be cheerful. Maintain this, the essence of your nowness, and you're free from this momental spin, this centrifugal, centripetal force, this out and in movement, this whirling condition of your environment. Then you are free. So once you're cheerful, and you don't let this push and pull, the anguish and the agony of it get you, it will come out. And it has a certain time frame, and it's photo finish. And photo finish is still now. We can never get out of the now. Because everything is cosmic economics, well balanced to fit. No more, no less. It's positive points. That's why I said we have to change our concepts of living and our concepts in relations to economics of money. Two, our fears are centered upon, like the man who got one talent and buried it. He was afraid to take a chance. And our society is designed in such a way we have to take a chance if we don't want it. The tax structure is set up that you got to take a chance. So, the old systems of living, where the security is based on pay as you go, is no longer a practical condition for the realized man. It's only practical for the semi-realized man. The fully realized man works like God. How God works. He takes a gamble on a universe that didn't have no form, only for the form to turn around and curse him. You see, he knows pretty well that his creation was going to call him all kinds of names and everything, but he holds the purse strings, he still holds the principle, the interest. So that's the key to today's system of living with the economics around us. You borrow money, you feel you're in debt, because that's your sense of reference. You're not in debt. What you're really doing, you're buying time. And in buying time, you're acquiring equity. And by acquiring equity, you are living out of it to fill the bodily needs in order to use it as a bargaining leverage for something bigger. That's the new approach to the economics of spiritual living. The masters all use it. They don't pay as they go, you know. I was under that illusion one time till I found out they all laugh at me and says, come on, man. You think you can dream up of something that the world is working with that God don't work the same way? God is the biggest loan insurance company.
Time.
Right. He's busy sponsoring the whole universe on credit. Your social credit is as good as your integrity to pay your rental, not pay your bills. We are renting everything in this universe because we can't carry with us when we die. Therefore, we can't own anything. We can only bargain on a leveraged level with objects. So we change our whole sense of focus with our possessions. We don't have possessions no more. The philosophy is to teach us that we don't possess anything. But we start out with the insecurity of trying to say, this one little thing, I paid for it, it's mine, I'm going to hold on to it now and I can pass it on to my ears. My ears may take the thing and throw it in the garbage. And I gave my life for it. So when I realized that that is not the true essence of the spiritual life, the essence of spiritual life is to flow and let it work. Then we begin to get a new sense of references. And then the man who went out with 5 talents will make 10. The one who went out with 2 will make 4. The one who had 1 will have it taken back. This is the new principle in thinking, and you know, the teachers of truth just making us more conscious of the divinity and the magnitude of our spirit. So don't be afraid of it and take a chance and always travel with a spirit tire. Always travel with a spirit tire.
Yeah.
That means be cautious too. But don't be afraid. There's a big difference between caution and be afraid.
So now what's the concept?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we're talking about. No, yeah. All right. Good. Very interesting word now. You know that word now carries the criteria of accomplishment? All right, but within it, it carries the maximum reward of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Spell the word backwards, you'll see now.
Now, one.
When you won something, what have you got?
The reward. That's it. It's over. I mean, well, you know.
So the word itself is dualistic and it's all purposefully positive. There's no negativeness about it. There's no negativeness in God. He's now, and once you get him, you won the game. Who can be better off than being with him? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's it, but we don't want to be like a child, we want to be like some giant computer. And we go around all in the levels of different emotions, trying to allocate our devotions, when the thing is so simple. As we weed ourselves away from the rituals and the different time frames and start to see ourselves in the simpleness of it, then we got the freedom, the free mind, or not the cluttered mind, the free mind to work, the free mind that allows the spirit to flow. We don't want a mind that is busy telling God how to run his universe. We want to have a free mind, an uncluttered mind that allows him to run it through us. Then we don't need to constantly hammering away at ourselves about intellectual things. The intellectual things will take care of themselves because it's only games you play with semantics. And, you know, I remember one time I read there's a man called Dr. Johnson. he wrote a book. And the first few sentences in the book was just juvenile, extricate that quadruped.
Juvenile?
Juvenile.
Yeah, extricate.
Extricate that quadruped from the piazza, lest my PID, P-I-D, exterminate its vitality.
Oh my, guess I cannot that budge you right.
You see how he went all around the way to tell us something?
Well, you can do it. It can be done if you want to spend the
time. It reminds me of somebody who was speaking of the house that Jack built. They looked up in the dictionary all the various words. They used the most complicated word they could. They started, this is the domicile that John erected, and they went through the whole thing.
Yeah. You see?
Well, you said something about the sound current that we hear and the significance of it.
The sound current is the audible life stream or life energy, which is audible from the internal air, but it's ultrasonic. That's why it's in a different dimension, but it's audible from the internal air. And that life stream is God. God is life, but God is sound, you see. He is the distal ultrasonic waves. And these waves are responsible. These are energies, rhythms of energies that are responsible for the various rates of vibrations that form our universe. You see, the first manifestation of the ultrasonics, which is whirling or spiraling, that's why it's whirling or spiraling, from a nameless, means that you can't tag it, motion state. The first expression is vibration, and that vibration has a hum. It's called the cosmic hum or cosmic sound, so it's audible. Now, it's like a hum of a big dynamo, and it permeates the universe, this single force field, and becomes elements or atoms. And the vibratory rate or acceleration is responsible for the variations of manifestations in a state of polarity. That is our audible life current. Now, this principle is only in resident, that is to say, it is capable of self-recognition. The residency means it's capable of self-recognition in man, this type of tissue. It's passing through every form of life, every variation or every manifestation, but it's not self-recognizable in all of them, only in one. It's self-recognizable in man. A plant is closer to it by its fiber nature or structure. Therefore, a fiber structured object can pick up all the life flow in the universe and telegraph it back and forth. And they telegraph to the animal kingdoms first, and last is the man kingdom. But because the man kingdom is self-recognizable to the sound current, the animal does not clobber the man on the head and make him respect him. The sound current in the plant does not dictatorially affect man. It is man who has the sound current in a self-recognizable state, usurps the dictatorial attitude of clobbering the plant, cut it when he wants it, do what he wants with it. But the sound current by itself flowing through the atmosphere can clutter up your garden with a bunch of weeds tomorrow. You see? That's how the plant kingdom gets back at you. Just. But this is the sun current. And it is called the Christ in men. See, that's the Christ in men, the actual sun current. It's the master consciousness, the audible life current. It's focused at the point between the eyebrow as a resonator, but it's audible in terms of the flow of the blood, because the life is in the blood on the right side of the brain, which means sitting on the right side of the father, father being the centrum or focal point where the energy beams in on the brain. Now, since the life blood, it's in the life blood, and the life blood moves down on the left side of the brain, then it travels down as light. Light travels down, light doesn't travel up. Light is always it appears to be moving up in the world of illusion, but in the world of actuality, it's moving down. It's following the course of the blood, and sound is moving up. So, in the world of illusion, sound appears to be going down, and light appears to be going up. But in the world of actuality, light is moving down and sound is moving up.
This is because the world we're in is a reflection.
Yes, the world we're in is a reflection of the actuaries of creation.
Is this what John was speaking about, St. John, in the Gospel? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God?
Yes. In the beginning was the ultrasonic frequencies or vibratory rates that express itself in a whirling or spiraling condition. And from the spiraling condition, we have different rates of vibrations. And the different rates of vibrations then go to the next condition called elements, in their atomic nature. And then from the element down through the last form, flesh, where it's in resident and it is self-recognizable. Only in the human form it is self-recognizable. The other forms, it's not self-recognizable. That means they